Tonight's shiur in Parshat Ve'era begins with the Arba Lashana Shel Geula Vitzeitzi Vitzalti Vitzalti Velakachti. So in Vitzalti, there was a story in Tafshin Samech Zayin. There was Nifter in Yerushalayim, Talmud Chacham, and during the Shiva they told over the following story about him, that he got married in Poland. He lived in Poland, and this was just before the war, and he was learning. He learned full time, and the war started, and the Nazis invaded Poland, and he was in his own world, you know, with his learning and davening. He didn't even realize that what was going on, and they came, happened to be on Rosh Hashanah, and he went to shul again, oblivious of the whole situation. And he's coming home from shul after Shacharis, Motzaf, whatever, Rosh Hashanah, and he approaches his building. And just at his entrance of his building, a Nazi comes by, and he sees this yid, you know, in his kittel and his, you know, payas, or whatever, holding his machzer in his hand. So the Nazi got furious, and he decided he's gonna, you know, kill this Jew. So he pulls out his gun to shoot him. And all of a sudden, he hears screaming from in the building from a couple of stories up. This man has his head out the window, and he's screaming something. And he's making a sign with his hand, like, you know, you put your finger across your neck as if to shecht, you know. So he's screaming, and like, so the Nazi, though he didn't understand what was being said, because the guy was speaking in Polish. Who was it? It was a neighbor of this Yid, a Goy, who hated Jews, and he always hated this Yid. The Yid, to him, always, you know, was very nice, they never said anything, you know, he was polite, but the Goy hated him. And now he thought, oh, great, you know, finally he can do away with his Yid. So this Goy was screaming out in Polish, you know, like, kill this, shecht this Yid, kill him, you know. However, the Nazi didn't understand Polish, and here's this guy screaming and going like this with his hand, you know, and so he didn't know what was going on. So the Nazi turns to the Yid, and he says, what is that guy saying up there? So the Yid thought quickly, and he said, he's telling me that I should shecht you. So the Nazi goes, what? Points his gun up at the Goy up there, and shoots him right in the head. And the Jew was saved. Be salty. Say, Maisi brings here from the Rav of a city called Gustinin, and his name was Gana Chassid Rabbi Ben Sion Miostrova. And story goes that he used to stay in the shul after Marav, the Shamish knew to leave the lights on and the heat on for this for the Rav, because when everybody went home to sleep, he used to stay for a few hours and learn every night. Fine. So one evening, the 3 hours went by, and usually by then, a few minutes later, he was home and didn't come home. His wife said, okay, guess, you know, whatever, had some business to take care of. She goes to sleep. She wakes up around midnight, and she sees her husband's not back yet. Says, that's strange, like midnight? She says, okay, I guess he has what to do, whatever. So she went back to sleep. She gets up again at 3 o'clock in the morning, and still her husband's not back. Okay, so now she started getting worried. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, I mean, so she's like, she got very scared. So she woke up her sons, and she said, listen, Tati's not here, and I know where he could be, so we have to go for, you know, search party. So they went looking around all over here, there, and they couldn't find him. Finally, one of the sons decides he's going to stop looking to shul, even though there's no reason he'd be there at this hour of the night, you know, there's no lights anymore or whatever. But he figured, whatever, so he'll go to see. So he goes into the shul, and sure enough, there's his father. There's a table where he used to sit at, you know, and learn every night after Marv. And he was sitting at the bench, you know, on his bench by the table. So he calls out to his father. He goes, Tati, you know, what's up? So his father, shh, shh, like making men should be quiet. He says, quiet? I mean, there's nobody here. You know, who am I waking up exactly? So the father's like, shh, shh, shh. So he couldn't understand, like, well, what's going on? So the father points to this guy who's lying on the bench next to him. What had happened? This Pasha Yid, you know, came, a poor man, came into the shul, and he was exhausted, and needed a place to put his head down. So he decided to put his head down right next to the Rav, and he put, like, he had a pekel or whatever, he put it down on the bench, he put his head down on it. He didn't realize, though, that he put it on the jacket of the Rav, right? He was sitting down, the jacket the Rav was wearing, he put his, you know, pekel on the jacket, and he put his head down, and he fell asleep that way. So what happened was, the Rav didn't want to get up, because he figured if he's going to get up, he's going to, you know, shake the guy, and he's going to wake him up from his sleep. He didn't want it to wake the guy up from his sleep. So he sat there in the dark, and so as not to wake up this, you know, this Yid. The son who had come in to get his father is, like, you know, saying, you know, point, you know, motioning to the father, okay, how about just, you know, slip your coat out and then get up and go, you know. So the father's like, no, nothing doing. I don't want to wake him up. So he remained there that way the entire night, right until the morning. And he didn't budge so as not to wake up the Siyah. So finally, when the you know, people started coming for davening for shacharis, so then the guy himself woke up, and you know, the people were shocked to see the Rav there sitting there. And anyways, the word got out of what had happened. So the Yid was, you know, he was a little bit embarrassed, you know, that he caused the Rav to have to, you know, sit there the whole night, so not to wake him up, and, you know, inconvenience him, whatever. But the end of the story is that this Yid was so impressed, and he said, I can't believe that a Rav would do such a thing. Oh, to sit there all night, just not to wake me up. He was totally taken aback. And because of that, he said, if this is what, you know, the Torah can do, make a person to such a mensch, and such a, you know, a Baal Chesed, someone, a caring person, he says, I'm not leaving this Beis Medrash. And he stayed in that Beis Medrash, and he learned, and he learned until he became a very big Talmud Chacham, because of the Rav's acts. Being here, Maisa is in America. Says it's Nahug, Minag, that in the winter, in the summer months, it's very stuffy, hot, humid in New York. So many families, they go to the mountains for the summer, and the Minag is that usually the wife goes with the kids, but the husband can't always go because he has to still go to work and, you know, run the business. So the husband stays home in the city and comes there for the weekends to be with the family in the mountains. Anyway, so there was one such family, and the wife and kids were in the mountains. He was by himself at home, and he Yetzer Hara got the best of him, and he decided that since nobody's around or anything, he's going to go to the show. So he went and he bought a ticket to a show. And so the night came for the show. And it was in, you know, like the outskirts of the city. So he drove there. And when he got to the theater, he realized that it was like an hour early. He got to a little bit too early. So he said, I'm not going to sit there, you know, for nothing. I'll drive around a little bit, take in the sights. So he's driving around, and where does he end up? He ends up by a Jewish cemetery. So he goes, okay, it's interesting. I might as well, you know, maybe go in, say a few Kapitel Tillim or whatever, and then go to the show. So he goes into the cemetery, and he sees in the center there's a ohel of so usually like a tzaddik's buried in there, whatever. He decides to go in, so he goes in, and he sees it was a tzaddik of the Rav Mitzelim was buried there. So he lights a candle and he puts it on the kever, and he starts saying tillim, saying some tillim, saying tillim, and before he knew it, you know, time went by, and he looks at his watch, and he says, oh boy, I'm going to be late for the show, you know, I better hurry up, I didn't realize. So he puts down his tillim and he leaves the oil and he goes out and back to his car, and he gets in his car and he tries to start his car and it won't start. He's starting, trying, just won't turn over. He says, oh, he's getting all flustered. And he says, oh, it's getting late. You know, the show's going to start. So he's trying to... Anyway, he tries this, tries that, da, da. And he's so exhausted from trying to get his car started that he, like, falls asleep. Conks out. And those few minutes he was sleeping, he had a dream. And in the dream came to him this yid with a long white beard or whatever. And he says to him, my dear Jew, says, as long as the candle's burning on the kever, you're not going to any show. So he wakes up from the dream, and he thought, okay, you know, stomach dream, you know. So again, he's like, it was like a new car, you know. He's like, not this old jalopy, it's like a new car. He's like, I can't believe it doesn't start. He's got to start. So he starts, again, he couldn't start. So again, he falls asleep. And again, the same yid comes to him in the dream and says, if you don't, he says, as long as the candle's burning on the kever, you're not going to any show. I told you. So he wakes up. He's okay. I mean, twice the same thing. I mean, this is, it's too coincidental. So he decides to go back into the kever. I don't know, maybe want to put out the candle so he can go to the show. I don't know. But he went back into the OL. And he was shocked to see that he noticed on the wall were pictures of the Rav Mitzalim. And that was the exact image of the person that came to him in the dream. So he realized what had happened. And right on the spot, he did tshuva. He didn't go to any show. And they brought this maisa to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and they said, you know, does he believe it? So he says, yes, I believe it. He says, since he came and he put a candle and he said Tehillim by the kever of the tzaddik, so he had tziyatet shmaya, you know, from the, because he gave kavod to kavod chachamim. So he says, it's very possible such a thing could have occurred. Next, find the inyan of Hakara Satov in the Sedra. Right, that Shem told Aaron to put out his hand and to bring the plagues of the Adam and Sfardei, etc. And Rashi says, Lafishahigine or Al Moshe Keshahushlach Latocho, since the river protected Moshe when he was put in there, therefore it's not proper that he should hit strike the river to bring the blood and the frogs, and therefore it was done through Aaron. He's a maisa with the late Rav Simcha Zissel Broida, who was the Rashiv of Hebron. And when he was already an old man, so his one of his the relatives, whatever, was came to his home to take him, help him to go to the yeshiva. So he had to walk down quite a number of stairs from his house to get down to the street level to go to the car. So he was a very old man, very weak, and he was like a step. Each step was a, you know, an avoda, you know, another step, and he's huffing and puffing. Another step. Finally, he gets to the bottom of the staircase, and he stops. He turns to his relative. He says, "Wait a minute, I have to go back home." So his relative said, well, what is it? You know, maybe I can help him. I can go. You know, he saw how hard it was to walk down the stairs. He has to go back up again and back down again. And, you know, so he said, hey, can I get something for you? He goes, no, I have to go. I have to go myself. So he says, you sure? He goes, yeah, I have to go. He goes, okay. So he helped him back up. Oh, another step. Huffing and puffing. Finally got to the door. He opens up the door, and he calls out to his wife, the Rebbetzin, and says, I left the house without saying goodbye, so I just wanted to do it now, so goodbye. And gave a smile, said goodbye, turned around and went there. That's Hakar Satov for one's wife. So, by the Makkah of the frogs, Tzardim, so Chafetz Chaim, he asked the following question. It says that Moshe davened that the frogs should disappear, and they disappeared. It says, however, he points out, he asks, what's the difference between that and Parshas Chukas, where Hashem had punished the Jewish people and brought the Nechashim Hasrafim, he brought these killer snakes to kill the people. And there, Moshe davened, and Hashem said, you have to get like a pole and put an image of a snake on it, and then if they look at the snake, then they'll get better, etc., etc. So ask the Chafetz Chaim, what's the difference? Why is it that by the snake, by the frogs, Moshe davened and they went away? When it came to the snakes, Hashem didn't just take them away. He had to tell them to do this, put an image, that. Why didn't they just go away? It worked by the frogs. Why couldn't it work by the snakes? So answer the Chafetz Chaim, he says that everything has a remedy except for Lashon Hara. Not so pashut. In other words, why did Hashem bring the snakes? Because it says over there that the Jewish people spoke against Hashem and against Moshe, and Hashem brought the snakes. So when a person speaks Lashon Hara, so he creates a kitrug. A kitrug that goes to Shemayim and talks against the people that sinned and spoke Lashon Hara, since they use their mouth bad in the wrong way. So the kitrug uses his mouth and doesn't stop being mekatre. So it's not so easy to get rid of it. The male over there wasn't just, okay, David and goodbye, you know, everything's fine. No. Since it was because of Lashon Hara, they had to go through extra ordeal of making the snake and look at where Hashem, just the tefillah alone, emotion wasn't enough. Since it was because of the sin of Lashon Hara. Brings here a maysa with a girl. The story takes place in Tavshin Sameches, 2008. There was a Rav Zilberstein was visiting Rav Chaim Kanievsky and the Rebbetzin, Ale Ashon, and she had just come back from, the Rebbetzin just came back from a chasana. And she says, oh, you know, I got to tell you, I just came back dancing from his chasana, very, very special chasana. So he was curious, said, well, what's so special about it? She said, 4 years ago, 2004, there was a girl, 15-year-old girl, there was in a very, very serious traffic accident, car accident. And she was in critical condition. She was in a coma. She was in a coma for 2 weeks. And the parents were, you can imagine, beside themselves. And they came to us, came to Reb Chaim and the Rebbetzin to ask the daven for their daughter who was in a coma. So they, of course, daven for her and such. What happened? With Hashem's help, she got better. She came out of the coma. So the mother recalled, says, you know what? My daughter woke up 2 weeks in a coma. She opens up her eyes. You know what the first thing she says to us is? She asks us a question. She said, how long have I been out for? So, parents thought what's the difference? You know, my nafkamina, you know. So they asked her, what's the difference? What's important do you know, how long you're out for? So she says, well, because a few months ago, I was mekabel myself to learn every day two halachas in the Chafetz Chaim, the Sefer Chafetz Chaim. And I want to know how much I have to be mashlim, how much I have to make up. Because I have to know how long I was out for. So they were taken away. Like, that is what concerned. No, 2 weeks in a coma, she wakes up, how much do I have to be mashlim with a Sefer? That's what. So the parents told this over afterwards to the Rav Chaim and the Rebbetzin. The Rebbetzin was so taken aback. She goes, what a special daughter you have. I'm going to promise that you'll see one day I'm going to be dancing at her chasana. Now, this was a 15-year-old girl who was, okay, she was out of the coma, but she was in critical condition. Nobody would dream, you're getting married and whatever, It was not something you can even think about at this time. She had to go through a whole series of operations. It was a terrible matzah. Anyways, so now, 4 years later, the Rebbetzin has said, I came back from a special chasana. I was just at this girl's chasana. Just 4 years later, she's totally fine. Everything's well. So, I promised her I'm going to dance her in her chasana. So I have to keep my promise. And that's right. I came back. Okay. It's a word from the Bir Yosef. It says, by the Makas Barad, on the pasuk Kinini Mamtir Keis Machar Barad Kaved Meod. So Rashi points out that Moshe Rabbeinu made a shrita, made like an indention in the wall, and he said, as the Rashi's pointing out, what says Kinini Mamtir La Keis Machar, I'm going to bring tomorrow the Barad, that Moshe was saying, when the sun reaches here, this point on the wall, tomorrow, you're going to see Barad. see the hail fall. So he asked, you know, well, why did he do that? Well, so he didn't do the other makkah. He didn't go by Tzvardeya, you know, when the sun reaches here, you know, why Dafka by Barad did he make a point of saying when the sun reaches here, you know, the Barad's going to, you know, why Dafka? So Be'er Yosef is very nice. Says in order to magdil the nes. What's the nes? Said normally when hail falls, it's not like a nice, you know, sunny summer's day. It's usually very, very cloudy and dark and stormy, and that's when it hails. So Mela, what was he saying? Is going to be barad kaved, heavy. So if regular hail is going to be dark, certainly if you have a heavy hailstorm, it's going to be when it's very dark outside. It's very cloudy. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, when the sun reaches over here, the hail is going to fall. Sun? I mean sun. Hail and sun don't go together. So Moshe was saying, yeah, that's if it was natural hail. But this is not going to be natural. It's the Kodesh Baruch Hu going to bring the hail. So therefore, it's going to be sun. It's going to be sunny when the hail is going to fall. Therefore, when the sun reaches over here, then the hail is going to fall. So you want the magdil, the nes, it's going to happen when it was sunny. See here, Maisa, the Yishuv, Moshav Komimiyu, the religious Yishuv, that they were, since religion, they keep Shemitah. And one day, a non-religious man walks into the office in the Moshav there, and speaks to the secretary of the Moshav, and says, he introduces himself that he's from the Jewish agency. And he says that the reason why I'm here is that we decided we'd like to plant an orchard over here in your Moshav. And if you take care of it, and then you get the profits from it, which was a very, very good, good deal for the Moshav, you know, because they pay for all the planting and everything. They just have to upkeep it, and they get the profits. So it's a very, very good thing for them. So the secretary said, that's wonderful. I'm really, we're very happy. But I just have to tell you something. And next year, Shemitah year, and we can't take care of it normally like we would normally do. We just have to, we can do the minimal things so that things don't die, but we can't, Shemitah, we can't work it, take care of the trees and things. So he says, what? He says, what's Shemitah? He didn't even know what Shemitah was, So explain to him, whatever. So he said, then forget it, I'm not going to plant the orchard of things that you're not going to take care of already. Especially in the first years, the saplings are very tender or whatever, forget it. Okay, he said, look, do what you want to do, but we can't, Shemitah, sorry. So the guy left. So the Moshav was very upset because this was a very big money-making thing. And so the Rav of the Yishuv at the time was Rav Mendelson Zatzal, and he spoke to the person in the Jewish agency, who was head of the orchard. His name was Shlomo Vygotsky. And he tried to explain to him. He said, listen, Shemitah is a very special mitzvah where we put our bitachon in Hashem, and Hashem helps. And so he, the guy said, fine. He says, let's see what happens. I'll take a chance. I want to see what your Shemitah thing. Let's see what's happened. So that same week they came and they planted the orchard. So what happened? So as Shemitah year rolled around soon after, and they didn't do anything they were not allowed to do, only the minimum things that they're allowed to keep things alive. So representatives came afterwards, after the year was over, they came to check out the orchard. Now they had made their rounds to the different orchards, the non-Shemitah, the place that didn't keep Shemitah. And they said, they thought to themselves, we can imagine what's going on over there in Komimiyu. Why? Because even the places that were taking care of it, they had a lousy year, and the stuff didn't look too good. Until they came to the Komimiyu, and they looked at it, and the guy almost fainted. He said he couldn't believe it. He said the plants looked, way better than all the other places they were not keeping Shemitah. So he was really taken aback. So what happened also, a few years later, when the sixth year rolled around, so they called the secretary of the Moshav, and they asked how was the Yibul, how was the produce this year, how many crates did you manage to put aside? So the secretary said, let me see. He looks in his books and he says, we were able to harvest 2,000 crates. So the guy says, what? No, really? He says, yeah, well, really, I'm looking right here at the figures, 2,000 crates. He goes, 2,000 crates? He goes, how could that be? He says, that's three times the amount of crates that you have in a normal year. How could all of a sudden on the 60 you have 2,000 crates? That's three times the amount you normally have. So the secretary says, yeah, it's a pasuk in the Torah. It says, and he'll have through on his first 3 years. Finally, it's a very interesting vort from the Dudai Yitzhak, his name is. Right at the end of the Sedra, with the Makas Barad, so he points out the following here. It says that right at the end, the last two psukim, it says, "Vayar paro ki chadala matar v'barad v'kolot, v'yosef lachto v'yechbed libo hu v'avada." So Paro saw that the barad, the hail stopped, and the kolot, the thunder, the hail and the thunder stopped, and he continued to sin, and he hardened his heart, and he didn't want to let the people go. Last pasuk, v'yechazach leparo v'lo shilach et b'nei Yisrael. Paro's heart got hardened, he didn't send away b'nei Yisrael, kasher tziv Hashem b'yad Moshe. So he asks, it's a repetitive. But we just said already that his heart was hardened, and he didn't send away the people. Why does it say again, v'yechazach leparo? So he explains that the first pasuk is not just telling us that he hardened his heart, but why he hardened his heart. Meaning. So he makes a very, very interesting hour. It says the following. Says that in the earlier psukim, that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, lift up your hand on the Shemaim, etc., and there's going to be a barad. So what does it say? He lifted up his hand, and what happened? Hashem natan kolot ubarad. He brought thunder, kolot, like sound like thunder, and barad, and hail. Okay. So thunder and hail came. Okay. Then Paro sends for Moshe and Aaron, and he says, Hashem atzadik, v'ani amir rishaim. Hashem's the righteous one, we're the wicked ones. Fine. He says, please daven to God that to take away the, again, what's the order? The kolot ubarad. Again, same the order. The thunder and the hail. So Hashem brought thunder and hail, and then Paro asked, take away the thunder and the hail in that order. So he says, fine. So he says, I'm going to go out, I'm going to lift up my hands to Hashem, and what's going to happen? The kolot, or the thunder, is going to stop, and the barad, the lo yeh. There's not going to be any barad. So that's exactly what happened. The whole time, again, thunder, barad. So Moshe went out from Paro, lifted up his hands to Hashem, v'yachdalu ha-kolot v'ha-barad. Again, the thunder and the hail stopped. Right? Throughout the same order. Thunder and hail. Thunder and hail. Okay. So along comes the pasuk we brought before, and explains us why was his heart hardened? Because Vayar Paro, what? Ki chadal hamatar vabarad vehakolot. Because he said, hey, this isn't what Moshe Rabbeinu said was going to happen, or what I asked for. I asked for the thunder and then the hail to stop. What happened? The opposite. Vabarad stopped and the kolot. The hail and the thunder. That's not what I asked for. So, says the Dudei Yitzchak, what is he talking about? That's exactly what he asked for. Right? He asked for the thunder first to stop and the hail. It came first, thunder and hail. He asked Moshe Rabbeinu, please stop the thunder and the hail. And then the pasuk said, that's what happened. The thunder stopped and then the hail stopped. Yet Paro turns everything around and says, it's not what you said. You stopped first the hail and then the thunder. But that's not true. So we see from here, person wants to do what's wrong, sees things all backwards. Right? Exactly what Hashem did, exactly what he asked for, and that's what happened. Exactly. But what? Turns everything around. He sees things all crooked. That no, Hashem did it the wrong way, and because of that he hardens his heart. No, Shapella. That's unfortunately the way people are. Hashem helps the person, does things for him, gives him siyata d'shmaya, and instead of saying, wow, look, Hashem's helping me and doing my ratzon, he turns everything around and says, oh, Hashem doesn't like me, why is this happening? It's exactly what you wanted. Exactly, you see things all crooked. Means the Maisa will end with this, about a Yid who was able to see things the right, correct way. So there was an older Yid, a simple Yid, but an older man, and so he was a member of this certain shul. And one day, a sofer came to the shul, and he said that he's going to, he has a special deal, that anybody who wants their fill-in check today, he'll check them for free. Do a chesed, check everybody's fill-in that wants for free. So he told the people in the shul, whoever wants, put their fill-in bag on the bima, and I'll, you know, gather a few minutes, I'll come and I'll gather them, and then I'll check them. Fine. So whoever wanted to put it. Now, this Yid didn't hear about it. He wasn't there. He didn't hear about the announcement. He didn't hear about the checking. But he had to go out of the shul for a few minutes, so he took off his tefillin and he put it on the bima, not realizing that there, what was going on. So fine, he puts it down. Now these tefillin were very special tefillin to him. These were some old tefillin from a few generations ago, from they belonged to some tzaddikim in his family or whatever. Very, very chashuv tefillin. And he didn't know, and he put the tefillin on the bima and he left. So the sofer came and he saw the different tefillin. That's fine. So he took the tefillin, all the tefillin from the bima to check, including this yid. So what happened? Wouldn't you know it? He's checking the tefillin. He comes to this yid's tefillin. He goes, wow, these are, looks, you can tell they're chashev looking tefillin, whatever. He's checking them. Lo and behold, a word's missing. One of the words missing from the parsha. I mean, it's tefillin or puzzle. Totally puzzle. So he brought them back, and he didn't, he left them out to show the puzzle, whatever. And people realized that this was this yid's, the old man's tefillin, and they said, oh my gosh, what are we going to tell him? He's gonna have a heart attack, his tefillin, these special tefillin that he's putting on his whole life, are a puzzle, he's already an older man, and afraid of what's going to be. Anyways, they're talking to each other, what it was going to be. Just at that moment, the older man comes in, the yid, and he sees his tefillin there lying there, opened up, parses, whatever, and, what's going on over here? So they're like scared to tell him, whatever. But, okay, they had to tell him, and they said, listen, told him the story, you accidentally left your tefillin here, you didn't realize, and they were accidentally checked, and unfortunately, their puzzle, word was missing. So the yid, they thought he was going to faint, But instead, he turns to somebody there, and he gives him some money. He says, quick, go to the corner store and buy some schnapps. He says, what? He runs across the street, gets some schnapps, brings it back, and he says, I'd like to make a l'chaim. And he pours happily everybody a little shot, and he has a glass, and he's all like happy and dancing and whatever. And he said, he's got the god, he cracked, because of what happened, he lost it. So they said, what's going on? So he says, what do you mean what's going on? He says, just think. Hashem mamish loves me. If this whole thing wouldn't have happened, I wouldn't have accidentally placed my tefillin on the thing. It wouldn't have been, it would have been checked. It would have ended up, I would have gone to the grave never putting on a kosher pair of tefillin. So the Gemara said, that's called a posher Yisrael begufam, somebody who never putting on tefillin. I would have gone to the grave never putting on a pair of tefillin. Never have the mitzvah tefillin. So Baruch Hashem, look at this. Now I can buy myself a nice kosher pair of tefillin and at least be able to put on tefillin a few times, before my time comes. And so what, I shouldn't be happy? Mama siyata d'shmaya, of course. She said, this is a yid that sees a situation and looks at the right way of looking at it. That's what we have to do. So with Hashem, he made Tzitzchah Meretz Yisrayim, Eren and Iflos, we should see all the miracles that Hashem is going to bring us when we see the final Gevulah that's going to come, Bikar B'Yameinu, that's what the Shem.